Hi everyone, welcome to the Tech Entrepreneur on a Mission podcast. My name is Ton Dobbe and I'm the founder of Value Inspiration and the author of The Remarkable Effect. I envision a world where every B2B SaaS startup succeeds because they're creating software that customers would miss if they were gone. And here's why. Research consistently shows that 90% of all startups fail, and that's bad. What's worse, however, is that 75% of SaaS scale-ups fail. Companies that are supposed to have product market fit. Far too few scale-ups create the traction they aspire for and fail for the wrong reasons. And I believe this should stop. And hence I created my business. And the goal that I have with this podcast is twofold. First, to inspire new forms of value creation by sharing compelling ideas and stories about the potential that we can unlock when technology and people blend in the right way. Secondly, share experiences from tech entrepreneurs like you about what it requires to create a remarkable software business and how to overcome the roadblocks to do so. The guest on my podcast this week is Guy Cohen, CEO of Wonder.
And every AI right now is trained in the way that schools train us, which is to leap to a solution, to leap to an answer. We took a very different approach. We've been answering professional questions for the better part of 8 years. What we've learned is that the initial question you pose is 7 degrees removed from the actual things you need to know. And the only way to get to the right set of questions is to ask more clarifying questions. So we built a clarification engine called CLAIR, short for clarity.
This is Guy. He's a tech entrepreneur on a big mission. He worked for 3 companies in his career. From 2011 to 2013, he worked at Morgan Stanley in the RVR group. From 2013 to 15, he worked at Seeking Alpha as the director of business development. And during that period, he faced a number of repeating problems and started to look for solutions. The result? He and his co-founder started Wonder in 2015. And their mission? To make the world a little more curious. And this inspired me. And hence I invited Guy to my podcast. We explore the profound link between curiosity and business success. Guy then shares the pitfalls of not asking the right questions and how that sparked the idea to founding Wonder in the first place. He shares why he chose the route of augmenting human potential and how it helps create defensible differentiation. He also elaborates on the challenges that he faced getting traction and what he needed to change to accelerate momentum. And by listening to this podcast, you will learn 4 things. Firstly, why most failures and how they are related to money are a consequence of not being curious enough. Secondly, how blending technology with a human element has helped them to deliver value that no other company can. Thirdly, why, if he could rewind the clock and do something differently, he would choose to narrow the aperture of who they were serving and why. And lastly, how fear inhibits the asking of essential questions and how to overcome that. Well, hi Guy. Thank you for making the time available today and being the guest on this podcast.
Of course, the pleasure is mine, Ton.
And yeah, I was looking forward to this. I got introduced to you by your head of marketing and we had a conversation already a couple of weeks ago, and this where my thought about what this company was about, yeah, really got amplified. And yeah, had to have you on the podcast because it's about the original thought of the podcast, what can happen when people and technology blend in the right way. So you're the living example of that.
Thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure. And I think we can get some great learnings from this podcast as well, and some good inspiration. Before we start talking about the company, Wonder, what drives you? What do you get energy from?
Such a fantastic question. And in it lies the answer. I think I have always been insatiably curious. It's what drove me to want to build Wonder. And if I think about all of the different components of my life and what the, silver thread was through most of them, it was that curiosity that pulled me in directions that I didn't know I needed to go. And so I think our mission here at Wonder, and by virtue, my mission has always been to make the world a little more curious That's what we're trying to do. And yeah. I think if we can even do a small amount of that, even for one person or for two people, I think we'll have done our job to make the world a little bit of a better place, both personally and professionally. And so I think I live with a set of words that are, you know, stamped in front of my eyes, metaphorically speaking, which just tell me constantly to be more curious, to ask more questions. And so that's really what drives and inspires me. And yeah. It's really nice to have a couple of young children because they are brimming. It's coming out of their ears, their noses. The curiosity is completely unfettered, right? All of us who grew up, it gets beaten out of us, right? And that muscle is atrophied. They have it. So I've got a 5 and a 3 and a 1 year old and the 5 and 3 year old. Oh my goodness. The amount of questions about why things work the way they work. It's just, it's amazing. I get to live in it right now.
You're so right. And you're also right that it's beaten out of us. And I mean, you're currently reading my book. You said you're 1/3 through. So I think you're about to enter chapter number 4, Remarkable Software Companies Master the Art of Curiosity. And it's true, you know, the ones that are most curious, like you say, they get pulled into directions they never knew existed, that were available, could be possible. And that creates remarkable technology, remarkable marketing, etc.
By the way, on that, have you found that companies who are less curious end up failing more often in your experience and all the advising that you do? And if so, have you found that those who are less curious can become more curious?
Yeah, I haven't looked at it that deeply. And I also haven't backed it up with numbers and numbers and numbers, but it's what I constantly see. I mean, this is a podcast, possibly 290 or so, and I've been around for a while. I think a lot of companies start with curiosity and they pick up a problem in the market, create a solution for that. And a lot of people talk about sort of how business works is like an S-curve. You have to get going, you have to get through that initial disturbance. And suddenly things start to flow, but at some point it starts to flat down again. And if you then don't have the answers for what's next or it's too late, the source of that is in a lack of curiosity, because you haven't seen it coming. You haven't explored what's next. You haven't listened to your customers often enough to understand how their business is changing and how their problems are morphing. And that's all about that. I mean, I'm currently writing a big essay around that whole topic. And there's so many different angles to curiosity in one thing, but stagnation on the other end. And these two are really, really connected.
Incredibly connected. It's interesting because I think about most of our failures and how they were related to moments where we weren't curious enough. And there's a level of intellectual honesty that it takes to be really curious in the right kind of way to ask yourselves what isn't true that you want to be true. And I think in my experience in company building and in operating, so many times we just want something to be true. We want this to be the solution to the customer's problem. And so our brains force us to hear things that are misshapen, right? And that then tells us we got what we needed, move on to the next thing, instead of being genuinely curious. And so, yeah, the reason I asked the question, aside, from me being curious about your experiences, you've seen so many businesses. I've seen it with ourselves, even with us who we train ourselves on this sort of heuristic. It's really hard when you want something to be true. My VP of product, he always says, when you really want something, the obstacle is generally questions. And you usually skip over those questions when you just want something to be the way that it is.
Yeah, I completely agree. Yeah, I typically talk about it as a sort of a disease that's called complacency. You start to tell yourself stories that everything is great and everything is fine and that you have, there's nothing in the world better than this. But it's not true.
Yeah. I guess the brain's not pain enough.
It's about the guts to ask those questions and to be okay with the answers, because that gets you further.
100%. Look, I even think back to some of the worst moments in the company building experience where really we were afraid to just say, we haven't figured this out. We want it to be figured out because we think that's the thing that's blocking growth, or we think that's the thing that's preventing us from going faster. But in reality, on that spectrum of figured out to, you know, figuring it out. We were a lot closer to figuring it out. And because we fooled ourselves to think it was figured out, we ended up making a lot of wrong decisions. You know, I'm grateful that we're still alive and get to tell the stories and get to keep, you know, playing and having fun. But it takes guts, as you said, to ask the really hard questions and to answer them honestly.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you're getting my daily email, and the daily email always ends with questions for you to reflect upon. I try to make them as finger pointing as I can possibly do, because that's where value starts. And I get so many reactions from people to say, okay, I read it and I typically always want to go to that question.
That's what I do with you. I scroll right at the bottom.
Okay, you should read also what's in there, by the way. That's a long
story. I do too. I go back. It's just the question is what intrigues me.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, that's fun. Okay. Curiosity. So making the bridge then to the company. You joined the company in 2015. I'm not sure exactly when the company got started. Was it the same year?
Yeah. So in its current form, it was 2015. And maybe I can share a little bit of the backstory for Wonder.
Yeah. I mean, what I'm always intrigued by or interested in is like, what's the mission you're on? What was the problem that you saw in the market, or the founding team saw in the market that needed something different to solve it?
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. So taking a big step back, the last company that I was at was a company called Seeking Alpha, which was a big crowdsourced equity research platform. And frankly, a lot of, you know, how we think about Wonder came from the days that we and other early founding team members spent at Seeking Alpha. But as we were scaling Seeking Alpha to a few hundred people and growing the business and thinking about new ways to run the business, and I was running business development and new product lines, like the marketplace, and we were spinning up all these new versions of what new revenue looked like Seeking Alpha Pro. One thing that became really clear as we were innovating was that the journey of innovation is rooted in inquiry, right? And if we get really clear about what that means, you know, the innovator's journey starts from ideation and then ends up in commercialization, right? Yeah. And there's a bunch of steps along the journey, right? You ideate, you prioritize, you develop, and then you commercialize. And at each of those stages, for us at Seeking Alpha, we continued to run into questions, right? How should we build this? What's the right pricing mechanism? Who are the right target audiences? How do we know they're the right target audiences? Sure. How do we verify those things, right? How do we know if we're going down the wrong path? What are the different UX and UI principles that we want to guide this new set of, you know, features? How do we know that those things will hold true for us if we're using analogies from other companies? All of these questions. And what happens when you're a child with insatiable curiosity like I was, is you go to the place where knowledge exists, which is a library. At least in my day, that's where it existed before the internet, right? And so if you spend a lot of time in libraries, you quickly realize how important a reference librarian is, because they are the key holders to that knowledge, right? They know the Dewey Decimal System and they know how to access it. And so as we were scaling Seeking Alpha, I kept having these questions, and I found myself continuing to do two things. A, searching for a solution for my professional questions. These are not questions like, hey, what's the best Thai restaurant down the street? This is like, hey, I am thinking about buying a bunch of preschools, right? This is an example of a friend of mine. I'm thinking about buying a bunch of preschools in Southern California. I need to know what the average multiple is on those. These are the kinds of professional questions that we were asking that we couldn't find answers to. Yeah. And what we kept finding is two things. One, that we were doing the work ourselves, that Google had become the new version of the library. And at the same time, that nobody had brought the librarians over with them. And so we tried every tool we could find, right? We tried Upwork, we tried Fiverr, we tried the expert networks, we tried survey companies, and none of them did what we needed, which was, I am on the innovator's journey, and I have questions that I need some level of veracity, right, in my answer that helps me make a better decision. And there was no solution. And so I kept playing. And at the time, I was at Seeking Alpha in 2013. I'm also a part of a network called Sandbox, a big, you know, multinational group of entrepreneurs. And that network puts on an annual retreat, and they were putting on an annual retreat in the Poconos. And I got put onto a bus next to a guy named Justin, who was my immediate friend, because I didn't know anybody sort of in New York. And we became best friends right away. And he told me about this idea, and it was our curiosity that snapped us together. And he told me about this idea, which was, he wanted to rebuild the search engine. He didn't feel like it was the best way to explore knowledge. And he also was curious in so many ways and wanted to approach this problem that way by building, you know, the new version of a search engine, a social search engine at the beginning. That was the idea, which was Wayfinder. And that's what it was in 2013. And he asked me that day, like, hey, what are you doing at Seeking Alpha? Let's go build this company, right? Seems like we're mission aligned, right? And I said, no, I just left Morgan Stanley and I just joined Seeking Alpha. And there are like 30 of us. I can't go join a two-person startup, you know, right now, because it was him and a few engineers at the time. I said, but let's just be best friends and let's work together on the weekends. I want to be the CEO of Seeking Alpha. And so that's what we did. We worked together on the weekends from 2013 to 2015. And eventually the idea of Wayfinder morphed into what I described, which is what we were really in need of and what we kept running into. And this all happened at the intersection of marketplaces exploding, right? Uber was birthed at this time. And so what became really clear is the following things were true. A, people have a lot of professional questions that are not being fostered and not being answered. B, there is a massive amount of underemployment for really brilliant people in the United States. PhDs, retired professors, librarians, people who are driving Ubers and would prefer to not make $7 driving around, you know, Southern California, but instead are getting their MBA at UCLA and would prefer to earn while they learn, right? And so we took somewhat of an honest stroke here and said, hey, let's go interview a bunch of people. Let's go talk to people at consulting firms. Let's go talk to entrepreneurs and see how much these professional questions would be worth solving. Are they willing to outsource them? What would have to be true? How much money would they spend on that? And over time, it got to the point where Seeking Alpha was scaled. And I was so obsessed with this idea. And I was actually moving to Seeking Alpha's headquarters in Israel in 2015. And on the day I was leaving, Justin and I were, you know, the new version of This Wonder was launching through all the work that was going on in the background. And he was like, don't fly to Israel. Don't move there. Stay here. Let's build this company. I had already packed my bags and I moved to Israel that day. He came literally 4 hours before my flight and was like, don't go. Went to Israel, spent the whole flight writing a thesis on why I think it wasn't the right idea for me to leave Seeking Alpha at that moment and go build Wonder. It eventually became our initial go-to-market strategy. And I moved back a month and a half to build Wonder. And that was the genesis of the Wonder of today.
What a story. Love that. Love that. Yeah. And you're up to something big, because that is indeed a problem that is not solved, not by Google, not by companies that I know in this space as well. I've been in contact with a number of those networks that have connected me with people that had a lot of questions, and it's not scalable.
It's really hard. And that's why the consulting firms charge as much as they do. I think they are, you know, and have always been the business that plays in professional questions, right? I think
that's true.
It's really hard to take a crack at how do you build a downstream version of that that's technology rooted, that's human verified, that allows for scalability and for speed. And that's just, that's a really challenging problem, which is why we've had so many incredible failures over our last 8 years of operating, because it is a very, very challenging thing.
Yeah. Well, let's dig into that. What is the opportunity if you get this right? If the world starts to use Wonder, how do your customers change now that they found you?
Such a great question. Are you asking in terms of change with respect to business outcomes?
Yeah, maybe even bigger.
Yeah. So I think bigger, definitely more than just the business outcomes themselves. I think that if I step back and reflect on why the most successful people I know are the most curious, it's because that journey of curiosity is not something that just happened to them. It's a muscle that they practice really, really frequently. And we believe the same thing, right? That it can be beaten out of us when we're children and when we're, you know, in school, which teaches us to memorize answers, not to think in questions. And over time, that muscle gets atrophied, but it can be rebuilt, just like if you haven't gone to the gym or exercised in years. And so when I think about what does the world look like if we get this right, if all of a sudden every professional innovator in the world comes to Wonder and is using us regularly, I think a lot about the current customer experience, which we've just rebuilt over the last 9 months with AI, which is exactly this. When you come to Wonder with your question, for example, my wife and I have been playing more tennis, and I started out asking, you know, are there any data sets that prove that tennis equals to increase longevity? right? Genuinely curious. I just want to know. It'll help fuel me to play more than two times a week, right? Mm-hmm. What it does is not spit out an answer. Every LLM and every AI right now is trained in the way that schools train us, which is to leap to a solution, to leap to an answer. We took a very different approach. We've been answering professional questions for the better part of 8 years. What we've learned is that the initial question you pose is 7 degrees removed from the actual things you need to know. And the only way to get to the right set of questions is to ask more clarifying questions. So we built a clarification engine called CLAIRE, you know, short for clarity, in which when I pose that question, it asks me a bunch of clarifying details. Hey, guy, are you looking at professional athletes who play tennis? Are you looking at people who are hobbyists? How many times per week do you play tennis? How important is that? Are you looking at people who started later in life or who have been playing their whole life? How do you want us to control for variables like other socioeconomic factors that might go into these details, right? All of a sudden, you start to realize, oh my goodness, I haven't really thought through every component of this question. And so this is my long way of saying, what I think we do, even before we get you the answer, is we help you think differently about the problem, right? Yeah. And Einstein had that famous, you know, saying that if I had an hour to solve the problem, I'd spend 55 minutes thinking about it. I'm going to bastardize it, and I hope he's okay with it. If I had an hour to solve a problem, I'd spend the first 55 minutes thinking about questions about how to solve the problem and what are the angles of this problem. And then the answer reveals itself almost always, right? When you get to the right set of questions.
Let me make a small interruption here. Gideas made a critical remark about a single detail that sets their company apart from anything else. Instead of building yet another engine that would give us a straight answer to our straight question, but just a bit faster, they focused on clarifying the question till it's at the level where it needs to be. And with that, they take out the root cause problem why so many innovations fail. It all starts around an ill-defined problem, and hence results into an ill-defined solution. It's a trait remarkable SaaS companies master. They excel in curiosity, and this helps them to get to the essence so they can build new value possibilities. That's noticed and drives momentum. And you can master these traits as well. And the first step? Simply read my book. I've made the electronic version available for free. Just visit theremarkableeffect.com to grab your copy, and inspiration will spark within 10 minutes. Back to the interview.
And so what I think happens if we get this right is that I think we build an army of humans who think in questions. And I think what that then leads to is A, better professional outcomes. Because if you think, like you said earlier, the companies that are most successful are the most curious. I believe that. If I didn't believe it, I don't think that people would use us, and I don't think we'd be doing a good job. I think I'd probably want to go spend time on a different problem. But if that's true, that they have better business outcomes, what I think this does also is it fully bleeds over into the personal life. Because if you get more professionally curious, you get more personally curious, right? Am I with the right person? Are we sure we want to have 3 children? Am I approaching this problem with my child in the right way? Am I getting the love that I think I need to get? All those other things that come from curiosity, because curiosity isn't bound to professionalism. It's completely unbounded. And yeah. So I think that if we get this right, what we do is we end up with a population that is more curious, which will then understand each other better, especially in this environment, and hopefully make more better business decisions, which push the world forward in a better way.
Fascinating. Looking forward to a world like that. Although my wife often complains that I ask too much why. Too many times, why?
She will thank you for that someday.
Exactly. That's what I say as well. So we got through the founding story. We know what the opportunity if this is right. There's a lot of technology already out there. Of course, all technology that was already there, the Googles and the different ways to approach things. What do you believe has been an early decision that now appears to be really important for where you stand with the company? Is it maybe technology-wise or commercially or go-to-market-wise?
It's such a great question. Yeah, I think there might be a few, but if I have to choose one, it's probably our stance that humans really matter.
Uh-huh.
And so I think that so many of us who live in the entrepreneurial community think that technology is the answer to everything. There's good reason to believe that. But I think that all of the things that we have done have been rooted in that decision that humans really matter and have to be an integral part of the experience in delivering what we deliver, which is, you know, help you think through better questions and then help you get to the right answer to make better decisions. And I think that if we approach that from a purely technological sense, we would have missed all of the foundational elements for the first 7 years of the business that allowed us to build the things that we're now building through these new transformers and these LLMs. And even now, I feel stronger than ever that we're not building to automate away the humans. We're building to augment. And I think that humans plus AI will win, not that AI will win in and of itself. And I think that that fundamentally sets us apart from most of the companies that both build in this space and that are approaching this space. A lot of us in the tech community always view it as binary. You're either a human services company or you're a technology software, and you can't be both. And I think a lot of companies now exist that have been really successful that are proving that they can coexist. I think that decision has been fundamental to everything we've done. And so we don't get it right all the time. You know, humans are complex creatures. Software is a lot more forgiving. But I think the combination of those two things, of saying that both the technology and the humans are really incredibly vital and they're non-negotiable, has led to so many of the decisions we've made and so many of the paths that we've gone down that we wouldn't have gone down had we not made that decision.
Can you give an example of a decision like that? I mean, where have you seen an outcome that you didn't expect by just combining them?
Yeah, I'll give a recent one, which is really fun. What is, in your opinion, the major problem with AI today? From a professional adoption standpoint, from the business standpoint, not the legal standpoint or the moral or culture standpoint.
At the end, it provides a generic answer, you know? I could Google for it as well.
And possibly it's not even something that was Googled, but it was something that was made up. It's not trustworthy.
That's also true. Yeah, exactly.
And so I know of many people working on the hallucination component, and it is a very challenging problem for all of the reasons that have already been shared by everybody in the community. But one of the things that I think that we are approaching this slightly differently on is we have an innovation team that collaborates with the research operating system that we've built. And so I'll give an example. We've built a research OS that allows us to do what would take 50 hours of a human to do the grunt work inside the research process for the innovator's question that they come to us with. But what we found is that doesn't take you to 100% of what the customer needs. Yep. It takes you some portion of that, maybe 20, maybe 30, maybe 40% of the way, if we're really good about that automating piece. But the last 60%, which, you know, we'll call the last mile of knowledge delivery, is unanswered. It's unserviced right now, right? It's similar in the last mile of actual self-driving cars, right? Sure. It's a very, very hard problem to solve, right? One of the early, you know, founding team members of Wonder, Michael, he went and worked on that problem for a long time. It's incredibly hard. And then he went and built an automation company that actually had a human services component to do the last part of, you know, drone oversight. And so I think that that decision to say humans matter led to us being in a position where right now, where we have a research operating system that delivers so much for customers, it doesn't get them the full way there. That human component at the end that augments, that verifies, that takes it the additional creative steps that the machine yet isn't as amazing for, allows us to do things that I don't see any other company doing right now.
That's at the end what it's about. Yeah, because that's where the value comes in. Otherwise, you get something that's generic and you want to have it, yeah, you want to have it right, correct, trustworthy, and so on. I get that. On this journey, you said we made a lot of mistakes and so on, and ups and downs. What has been the hardest nut to crack to get the growth going?
Yeah, another great question. Wow, there have been a lot of failures, a lot of mistakes. I think when you have a product that feels like it should be ubiquitous, which is what we feel, right? There are professional innovators who work at the big consulting firms. There are professional innovators that work at the Fortune 100. There are entrepreneurs, right? Like we were at Seeking Alpha. There are, you know, small mom and pop shops who have questions. When you have a product that feels like it should be, you know, in ubiquity, it makes for a very hard decision around who to go after, go to market wise. And I think the biggest thing that we both struggled with, and look, even frankly, still struggle with, is deciding who is this product for. And I think that, you know, one of the things that we did wrongly and for a long period of time weren't as honest with ourselves as we could have been is we told ourselves, but like Uber and Slack are used by every other team in the world, right? Like doctors use Uber.
Now. And,
yeah, exactly. Yeah. Now. That's exactly right. And I think we wandered in the dark for too long because we thought we could market this to everybody. But you are, you know, and your book is so spot on with this. You have to decide who you are serving, right? And very, very narrowly and clearly in the early days, who do you want to solve what problem for? How do you know you're actually solving the problem in a differentiated way? And by not choosing, which we didn't do for many years, we sprayed. We went to anybody and everybody who had these questions, and we actually fooled ourselves thinking that the jobs to be done were so similar across these different industries and verticals and job titles that it was okay, right? Because a competitive landscape is the same for the entrepreneur as it is for the corporate innovator. It isn't, right? It's different. And so I think, you know, if I could rewind the clock and do something differently, which I can't, and so all I can do is plant the tree today, it would just be to really get specifically narrow and narrow that aperture of who we are serving and why we are serving them. And innovators, which is who we are serving, is really both core and endemic to what we do, but it's also really mission aligned, right? Like we want to create this new world. And I think that the people who are creating that new world are the people who we are serving. And so it feels really, really aligned from an input standpoint.
Yeah, you're solving on the one hand side a highly valuable product that's critical to the business because that's what your customer's business is about. And then doing it also for those people where you believe strongest in that gives the energy. And even then, that things will likely fail 15 times. That keeps giving you the energy to get out of bed and say, okay, we're going to solve it. I like that. And thanks for bringing it up because every single day I meet tech entrepreneurs out there that say, yeah, but we got perfectly clear who we for and who we're serving. And it's, well, I mean, it's in a direction. And yes, they can describe it, but it's way too wide. And that's where the problems start.
Another interesting thing on that, Tan, is just every time I've thought we were focused or narrow enough, I found out that we weren't, right? And I'll give an example. Like,
yeah.
Even corporate innovators, right, who is our primary set of customers and who, you know, we serve, is that specific enough? Is it corporate innovators at banks? Is it corporate innovators at food and beverage companies? What does corporate innovation mean? Is it product teams? Is it R&D teams? Is it marketing teams? Is it new business lines, right? We service a bunch of them. And so even that, I've been racking my brain, asking myself, are we still lying to ourselves? Are we still not being as narrow as we could be? And by the way, there's some version of narrowness that I think is, at least in more ways than one, diminishing in terms of returns. And so I think, I don't know where that point is, where the focus gets too pinpointed, where you actually end up missing out on insights because you've narrowed the aperture so much. But there is some point. I don't know that we've discovered it yet, but it's just interesting to find that every time I've thought we're focused, we turn a corner and then it's staring us in the face. No, you missed it. You could have been a little bit more focused here.
Yeah. And I see, yeah, it's in so many different areas. Yesterday, I had someone on the hot seat in my mastermind. And the problem was also qualification. And he said, well, we're perfectly qualified. The people that we have on the call are people that will become our biggest fans. But the qualification was, first of all, they were just far too early in getting the people on the call, far too early to get him on the call because he's a founder and all of those type of things, you know? And that's how you end up 20 hours in prospect calls that you could have spent radically different to the gain of both parties, you know? So it's, focus. My God. Are you focused enough?
Maybe, yeah, and that's something that's lived in my head too, that, you know, this board member did such a good job of beating into us. And look, we're a little too late. Thank God we're still alive. You know, we could have died many times on that journey. But even that, which you just described, that moment of being in the wrong room at the wrong time for that founder, there's an opportunity there for them to be really curious. And then to figure out, not only should I maybe not have been on this call, we are not qualifying right. Why did he not arrive at that question that you had? right?
Yeah.
And sometimes you need somebody to hold the mirror up to see the question. But if you get really good at training your curiosity muscles, he probably would have arrived at that before he got to your mastermind.
Yeah. Focus is not about the decision that you made about that focus. It's the decision that you didn't make. The questions that you didn't dare to ask because you thought, okay, yeah, it's wide enough. You know, it's narrow enough. A lot of it is driven by fear. And that's also in my book. I mean, I had this podcast interview with Dr. Diane Hamilton, who wrote this book around curiosity. And one of the things that stops people from being curious is fear and anxiety. And that's sometimes also kind of ingrained in culture. So that's even though people can be very curious, it can also be beaten out of them on the job. So it's
100%. Yeah. We run a session for all new wonderers who come to the company called Art of Asking Questions. And in it, we take them through three stages. Why does curiosity matter? Why do we suck at it? Right. And then what can we do to be better? And in the why do we suck at it section, one of the things that is really incredibly clear, if you spend time just staring at it, is that there's this lifelong journey to self-immolate all curiosity and to destroy any version of it that happens gradually over a multi-decade period. And some of the worst infractions happen when you get into the like actual professional setting. And there's a buildup to it, right? When you're in college and even before that in high school and in other versions of school. But once you get into the professional setting, fear is the number one driver for the death of curiosity. Yep. And the reason is so straightforward, right? Think about any moment you've been younger in your career and you wanted to ask that question. You're in a brainstorm room and the head of product says, we're going in this direction. Why don't you ask that question? Why don't we jump out and ask it? Because we're terrified. We're terrified of being wrong. We're terrified of being chastised. We're terrified of not knowing the answer. I remember one of my first board meetings, I was asked a question and it was amazing for me to look inside my body and see the level of frantic chaos happening of why don't I know the answer to that? And what you end up realizing when you do a lot of question asking is nobody really knows the answers to many things. We're all just making it up and trying to figure things out along the way. But the scariest thing is to not ask the question, not to be afraid of it.
It's true. Yeah. Looking at the time, we haven't even talked about your changing role from CRO to CEO, but I mean, I think the whole story came out perfectly. What do you believe are the secrets to be remarkable running the company that you do? What do you stay for to create something that people start talking about and keep talking about?
I'm not done with your book yet, so I think I'll have more of a good opinion when I'm done with the book. But I think as a starting point, I think, if we look at what success means for us, for everybody at Wonder in the coming years and in the coming decade, aside from the predication that we're still alive, right? I think that the thing that we really strive for is to create this new mentality around the importance of questions and the way that they drive businesses and decisions forward. And if I think about what will make us remarkable, it's not what I think. It's what is remarkable to our customers, which ultimately, makes it worthy of remark. And so I think that Victoria and every other team member is obsessing over that question, right? Which is what makes us remarkable for the customers we are choosing to serve. And I think that my job is to empower each of them to be in the driver's seat, to make those decisions and to figure out what the customers need that they don't know they need and to build that thing. And so I think that's what we're going to keep doing is trying.
Love that last line that you put there, kind of to get them to understand that they need something that they don't even think could be possible. That is, again, it's rooted in curiosity. So from your lessons learned running the company now for a couple of years, what would be a do and what would be a don't that you'd like to share with peer tech founders, tech entrepreneurs?
A do would be narrow your aperture. Right. I heard this language, which I love, which was shrink your TAM. And I'm talking specifically about the early stages, right? Not the people who are at the $100 million in revenue or $1 billion in revenue, but for the people who are building 0 to 1 and 1 to N, I love that language, shrink your TAM. Right. And so on the do side, it's don't be afraid of that. It's actually the path to success is to go more narrow. from everybody who I've seen do it successfully. And on the don't side, it's stop leaping to solutions, be more curious.
Yeah, exactly. Love it. Well, thanks very much. Where can people go to find out more about Wonder, if they're wondering why? And yeah, where can they find you to say hi?
Yeah. Thank you, Ton, by the way, for doing this and for being you. I think the curiosity is what brought us together, too. You can go to askwonder.com and they can find me on LinkedIn, or my email address is guy@askwonder.com. And so if you're building, if you're innovating, if we can help in any way, or if I can help in any way, please reach out and stay curious.
Great way to end this podcast. Thank you very much, Guy, for everything you shared, for all the inspiration that you've put across in a little bit more than half an hour. Fantastic. Thanks.
Thank you. Thanks, Ton.
And this ends my conversation with Guy, and I hope you enjoyed it. If so, please leave a review on iTunes. And if it inspired you, please share it with other tech entrepreneurs on a mission that you have in your network. Other than that, thank you for tuning into this podcast. I had the honor to speak to Guy Cohen, CEO of Wonder. As said, the goal that I have in this podcast is twofold. Firstly, to inspire new forms of value creation by sharing compelling ideas and stories about the potential we can unlock when technology and people blend in the right way. And secondly, share experiences from tech entrepreneurs like you about what is required to create a remarkable software business and how to overcome the roadblocks to do so. Before I close, I have two more comments to make. If you know other tech entrepreneurs on a mission that have a story worth sharing, please send me an email at ton.dobby@valueinspiration.com. Building the momentum all starts with revealing the ideas, and that starts with you. And if you want to know more about my book, or you're interested in joining the Remarkable Effect tribe, please visit my website at www.valueinspiration.com. Thanks for tuning in. And you could do me a big favor by rating the podcast on iTunes or provide me with your feedback directly. I'll see you shortly on a new episode.